Welcome back, my friends, to The Silent War with your host, Dustin Nemos of NemosNewsNetwork.com, where we continue with your help to break the cycle of fake news. We're joined once again by Mark Sargent, a flat earth recruiter and a well-known name amongst flat earth circles. Now, we had him once before, and we kind of discussed like the concepts, what flat, or as I call it, biblical earth is. But we are also, this time, we're going to go deeper. I've invited Mark on to help us to fill in the blanks, the history, the agenda, the censorship, the cover-up, all of it. I've got a few things to throw in there, but welcome back to the show, Mark.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
So, this is not for the beginners. Watch the last interview if you don't even know what we're talking about. But for those who have, maybe if you haven't formed an opinion, you're still forming the opinion, that's fine. But for those who are at least aware of what the flat earth discussion is, why do you think, how did we get to this point, Mark? I know that's a broad question, but like, I kind of want to go through all of it. Like the history, the people involved, the agenda, the institutions, all of it.
Sure. As far as how we got this far, just in censorship in general, or just how flat earth has been sort of stunted over the years?
Specifically with the cover up and the agenda around flat earth itself. I mean, whole branches of false science. And I would say that they're sort of built to fight the Bible, like evolution.
Right.
But that is nothing to do necessarily like directly with flat earth. So
it does and it doesn't, but let's get into it.
Yeah. Well, when you see the agenda, it does.
Yeah. When you see it, I guess some of these questions I get asked quite often, which is, why and how, and if you were part of the Illuminati, why wouldn't you tell the people? And it's like, oh, that's not, and I used to use the Illuminati. I generally call them the authority. Because if you ask any conspiracy person, what their top 20 secret groups are in order of importance, you'll get just tons and tons and tons of different lists. And that's the whole point. The first rule of power has never changed in history, which is stay hidden. We could talk about, seriously, if I asked you, it's like, what groups do you consider the most important? Is the Masons, the Trilateral Commission, is the Council of Foreign Relations, the Vatican, the Bilderbergs, the Rothschilds, Jewish cabal, take your pick. Just keep going and going and going. And no, I mean, I've sat in conspiracy or truth or community circles where people are just arguing about it. It's like, no, it's this group, it's this group. And that's the point, which is at the top, you can't be the ultimate puppet master and be on stage at the same time. It's the curse of being the puppet master, which is you cannot make yourself public, because if you are public, you are vulnerable. Or as Napoleon said some years ago, which was never put yourself in a position where they can overthrow you. And the easiest way to do that is to make yourself anonymous, meaning, kings can be overthrown, presidents can be overthrown, dictators and so on and so on, because they know who you are. You are a target. You once you are in the public eye, you have a giant target on your back. So you just don't, which is why, I kid people. It's like, we talk about the richest people in the world, right? It's one of those things, because, everybody, doesn't matter what religion you are, people worship money. And therefore the people with the most money get some, osmosis religious fervor around them. But I call them the publicly rich. So it's like, Bill Gates, new money. Tons and tons of Microsoft money, but it's new money in the grand scheme of things. Jeff Bezos, new money. Elon Musk, ridiculous. And, I'm still trying to figure out the logistics of that, because as you've heard sometimes, like, we understood why Bill Gates made a lot of money. Everybody and their brother had a Microsoft product.
Yeah.
And we knew why Jeff Bezos had a lot of money, because everybody's got an Amazon Prime account. I mean, everybody. But Tesla, come on. First off, he didn't even start that company. And yeah, there's some Teslas on the road. Sure, no question. But I've driven in all sorts of places in the country where it takes a while to find one on the streets. The difference is that people can invest in Tesla, and once it became a hot property, it's like the government just started sinking tons and tons of money. That's a whole nother thing for another day. But the point was, is that there's public money, you know, there's publicly rich, and then there's privately rich, otherwise known as the puppet masters. Even the Rothschilds story going back, I mean, even the Rothschilds didn't become, if you believe the legend, didn't become ridiculously powerful until the early 1800s. Which is still not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. So where is that going with this?
Well, let me pose a question to kind of get you back on track, I guess, even. But
sure.
I'm curious about this because, you know, we know that the Catholic Church in history was involved with the persecution, so-called, of many of these scientists that gave us the globe Earth theory that was debunkable. Right. even in their own day, it was debunkable. So it was almost as like the church played this controlled opposition to the bad science, and then they let it sort of happen after they pretended. Am I right?
I'm a big I don't. I mean, it's between you and me and whoever's listening, my favorite ultimate tip top of the secret societies has always been, you know, the Vatican, and you know, and it makes somewhat sense to me because it's the remnants of the old Roman Empire, you know, the empire that lasted for 1,000 years and basically dominated everybody. I mean, so when they pulled back and, you know, created and, you know, a religion around it, you know, why wouldn't they be the most powerful? However, as far as keeping the globe a secret, for the longest time, that it was kept a secret. But then again, around 500 years ago, this model started getting pushed forward, which was, and I got it, you know, it was in the clues, which was you have to create, and whether the, you know, the creators of this place had some influence in that wouldn't surprise me, because eventually you are going to have to change the model so that the average person doesn't get one of those wild ideas in his head. It's like, hey, let's go out and start exploring the edge of the world. Mm. And the answer to that, and you probably heard me say, it's the wildlife preserve argument, which is you take a bunch of buffalo and you put them in 1,000-acre wildlife preserve with water and grass and trees and stuff. They couldn't be happier. Absolutely fantastic. You know, they're super content. You put even 12 people in that same wildlife preserve, all they're going to care about is the fence.
Yeah.
That you like, well, why is the fence here? Why am I on this side? What's on the other side? Have I angered the fence people? It's like, maybe like we should Truman sacrifice to the fence gods.
Yeah. Like the Truman.
Yeah.
Very paranoid, increasing.
Very much like the Truman Show. Yeah. I know, it's hard to believe, by the way, the Truman Show is 24 years old now.
Yeah. That's art imitating reality right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So eventually the answer to why you have to create the globe model, or, you know, the question and the answer is why would you create it? Well, because if you don't, eventually civilization is going to reach a technological level sooner or later that they are going to figure out en masse where we are. Again, the Truman Show. It's like, you do not want Truman to figure it out. If he figures it out, the game is up. And imagine that with millions and then billions of people. And the answer is simple. You just tell them, you create a model where there is no fence. You know, you take it from, oh yeah, by the way, if you go out that far enough, you're going to run into some sort of barrier, which will raise a whole bunch of questions, which we won't be able to answer, or we're refusing to answer. And if there is no fence, you just tell people for generations and generations, there is no fence to look for because the model looks like this, looks like a globe, then they're not going to look for it. You know, 99.999% is, you know, sure, they're going to believe in the illusion, and it worked. Plus, they had the benefit of the fact that Antarctica is naturally has a big negative reinforcement system built into it, and it seems natural. So let's say you're a ship captain, but you know, let's say you found the old map, you know, that shows the world. It's like, yar, we should head out to Antarctica, you know, and you start heading that direction, you know, wooden ships, you know, the first thing you start, you know, it starts getting colder and colder. And then you see your first icebergs. You can ask any captain. It's like, most will turn around if they start seeing icebergs, because it's the biggest hazard you can ever have for a ship. And then let's say you meander around the icebergs, like, you know, screw the icebergs, we're going to go to shore. And we do. And then there's no plant life. There's no animal life. And it's just cold and snow and more ice and more snow. you know, there's no resources to harvest. You know, so you know, whatever you have in the boat, that's what you got. And soon, you know, so you start heading inland and then the altitude starts climbing again. Most people don't understand that most of Antarctica sits at about 14,000 feet of elevation, which is staggering. You know, altitude sickness kicks in for some people at like 7,000 feet, half that. So eventually you're walking in the snow and you just give up. It's like, screw it. You turn around and you leave. And it was your decision. That's the brilliance of it. You don't have to plant big signs in the snow. It says, go away, turn back, you know, or face our wrath.
Sure.
You just, you know, you turn back and it feels like your decision. And, you know, that information gets shared out with people. You go home. It's like, yeah, you really shouldn't go down there. And so most people don't. And then you create the Antarctic Treaty, you know, fast forward hundreds of years. You create the Antarctic Treaty in 1959, the only unbroken treaty in the history of treaties. And you say, oh, yeah, by the way, it's not even up for review until 2041, which is incredible. I mean, no treaty ever has you know, laid such a claim. It's like, oh, yeah, by 80 years, we're not even going to talk about it for like three generations. We're not going to talk about it. It's unheard of. You know, even now we're still, you know, 19 years away and it took a long, long time. And so then at that point you have the only people to get to go down there are military scientists, you know, which are stationed in certain places. And then the average person, let's say the average American wants to go down there. I think the cheapest price is pushing 15 grand. To go down there if you want to go down by yourself. And then you're just going to be put in a raft in the water, have your picture taken with a few penguins. Maybe you will see what they call the magnetic South Pole, and that's it. And then you go home. You cannot just grab a snowmobile and just start taking off, or a helicopter and start taking off. That's what the whole point of the treaty was, to lock everything down so that they didn't have to tie up any loose ends. Yeah. If you get my drift. So,
anyway,
go ahead. Sorry. I'm rambling.
Basically means that the governments of the world are all in on it, or, at least the ones involved in the treaty, which are pretty much all the major, governments on the Southern Hemisphere. Right. So,
every country that comes online has to sign it. So if you start your, you know, a brand new country called the, you know, Dustinopolis, right? And you create this brand new country. When you become an economic power, they put this piece of paper in front of you. It's like, hey, yeah, by the way, you cannot ever go down to Antarctica and set up shop with any of your corporations ever. And at the highest level, again, and they don't explain to you why. They just say, you know, it's national security. It's an environmental thing. They'll give you every answer in the world, you know, every excuse in the world to not talk about it. Not follow quite, you know, have any questions. And again, nobody owns Antarctica, which is also brilliant.
So,
go ahead.
Well, why do you think they're all hiding it? I mean, obviously in the world before this lie took hold, you know, you mentioned the materialism and the money chasing earlier. I imagine that world was a little bit less materialistic, at least for the average Joe who had little to be materialistic over anyway. So most people were poor throughout most of history. I imagine that the average person was more spiritual, and that this is a large part of the reason for the rise in atheism today. I mean, I was an atheist for the first 30 years of my life, basically until I figured out this.
Right. Oh yeah. And you're not alone. You know, there are certain, it's really strange for me to say, but I mean, there's a number of conferences, flat earth conferences in this country and other countries, which I was not invited to. Because I didn't quote enough chapter and verse. And when I first started, it's like, wait, there's actual, you know, like, you know, hardcore Christian flat earth conferences. It's like, yeah, sorry. And that's not my role. It's true.
There's more of them. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. 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 Well, and I didn't know until, you know, it came up when it's like, oh, hey, where are you going to be this weekend? And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this such and such conference. And it's like, what's that? And that's fine. It's not my role. You know, the chapter and verse guys, you know, that's Robbie Davidson and Rob's the ex, you know, the late Rob Skiba and Zen Garcia and guys like that. But your point is well made, which is what they all said was, this, the flat earth model and the topic became a huge recruiting tool for organized religion, and for an obvious reason, which is if you aren't living on a ball, you know, flying through space that's covered with a little bit of water and a little bit of air, and you're just this leftover residue from the Big Bang. If you're just basically, you know, living in a snow globe on some mysterious desk somewhere, well, it just screams intelligent design, of course, because it was built. You know, nothing like that happens by accident. And so if it was built, then it was created by someone. And then, you know, you have to, at that point, it's one of two things. It's either an older civilization, it's more powerful than ourselves, or the divine. And really, then you're just kind of splitting hairs.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, it brought them back to spirituality, including myself. You know, I didn't think that much about my role in the universe and the creator and, you know, why this place was built and stuff like that for a long, long time. And then when I looked at this, I've heard it too many times where people say, oh yeah, you know, it brought, you know, a lot of people literally went back to church because of this, or they went back to, you know, studying theology at home. So
go
ahead.
Well, I was just going to joke. I may start a church called the Uncensored Church at some point over this. And I just want to, sure? I want to push back.
Yeah. And there is a reason. I mean, again, if you are the government, not necessarily the government, let's just pick on the science. You know, when science reached a certain breadth and then became scientism, which, you know, come on, they make decisions even more extreme, I think, than a lot of organized religions.
Well,
put UN, their stamp on.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but the UN recently said, we own the science. One of their communications people, and I have a little bit of a satellite delay, so there's a little over talk. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, no worries. And Neil deGrasse Tyson, I said in a speech some years ago where one of the most arrogant things I've ever heard was him saying that science is right whether or not you believe in it. And it was his way of saying that when we put our stamp on things, that's, you know, we're the authority. You know, you should listen to that. And it's like, yeah, but then you're wrong later about a whole bunch of things, and they never apologize for it. That's the part that bothers me most about science, which is like, it, you know, they will condemn and ridicule anyone that contradicts their science until all of a sudden it is absolutely wrong, and then they'll just say, oh well, we're just going to readjust the definition and now that's the new science. Yeah. It's like, really, you're not going to apologize to anybody that you've been hammering on for years? So,
well, that, you know, you laugh about it, and I do too, because sometimes it's a laugh for cry situation. But, you know, there's a great awakening to this topic, just like in other areas, like spiritually, politically, socially, culturally. Everyone's waking up to so many different areas now. But that kind of brings it back to the point of, you know, are they just doing this to make us materialistic and hide resources? Or is this something where there's an organized cabal or group or Illuminati or the authority or whatever you want to call them behind the New World Order that's kind of showing its face right now anyway of these many governments, and they are waging a war against spirituality itself. You know, I'm not even going to necessarily say one religion or another, because this proves there's a God, like you said. It doesn't prove which God, but it does prove that there is a God, that there is a creator.
Yeah,
this decreases everyone.
Yeah, it's not that they're like waging a new war against religion. It's been an ongoing war, but it's been escalated in that the communication networks have gotten so much more refined, especially in the last 20 years. So, you know, if you have your five major religious houses of the world back in the day, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, and Christianity, and all the sects of those. You're giving them, you know, and let's simplify this, which is, let's say you figure out the shape of the world. What I'm saying is, even our best and brightest, even the authority, even the powers that be, didn't figure this out for sure. Again, until you can actually see it for yourself, you don't know. If you don't figure it out until almost 1960, do you tell the public? And if you're going to tell the public, how do you tell the public? And they realized, you know, for the most part, that civilization, you know, the cement was already set. So all the infrastructures are in place. The religions were in place. The economies were slowly but surely, you know, morphing into a controlled economy, you know, macro economy situation. And why would you mess that up? you know, it is the one of the rules of power is, you know, hold on to it for as long as you can. Men rarely will voluntarily give up that sort of power. There's no upside for them to tell people in 1960.
So
none.
So
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I can see that. I mean, I can see 1960s elites, you know, very materialistic or you know, very much into that, the beginnings of it, at least. Right. Culture was already declining quickly at that point. Maybe these elites just didn't want to rock the boat or alarm people or panic everyone or have some sort of religious revival. Maybe they just were anti-God in that sense. But let me ask you then about this, because even back in the 1908 Nimrod expedition, you saw that basically seeing a Nimrod camp, seeing a Nimrod expedition, seeing a boat called the Nimrod chartered to Antarctica is proof that the secret societies, or at least the Freemasons, are aware of something, and they were aware of it before anyone else.
But with limited resources, again, what I try to tell people is, until, let's say, we'll go even back before 1900. Let's go back to like 1700. It's like, what do you do? I mean, 1900 is not that much different, really. I mean, you got some steamships potentially and stuff like that. But back in like the 1700s, you had wooden ships, you know, sail-driven ships, and you had horses. What can you, and let's say you find the map, right? And someone shows you it, you know, let's say you borrow it from the Vatican. Somebody's got it. Somebody copies it down, you know, and they draw it out. It's like, look, this is what the world really looks like. What can you do with that information? Not much. Because one, everything's moving really, really slow. You know, the communication networks were barely in their infancy. And then, you know, most of the population still can't read or write. So, and again, you can't prove it for sure. You're not going to risk it all just because the map's there. It really wasn't until the internal combustion engine came out. And then it was modified and refined to where, you know, airplanes could, especially pressurized aircraft. So it took them a while, but they were trying immediately. I mean, you know, going back to, you know, 20 years later to Admiral Byrd, when they sent him down to Antarctica, or out to Antarctica, and he stayed there for the rest of his life, where, you know, in different mission capacities, just flying. I knew full well what he was looking for, which was, you know, whatever they found at the North Pole in 1926. They turned around, and could the Masons have known a little bit earlier? Sure. But again, they didn't have airplanes. So once you have the machinery to pull this off, you know, and the machinery is getting better and better. They were using the cutting edge of the day every year. I'm sure they were getting, you know, better and better planes. But the point was, you've got to find out, you've got to map the whole thing out to see if it lines up with whatever you've heard about, the myths, the legends, you know, the maps on papyrus paper or whatever it was. And then at that point, then you have to make that decision, which is, do you let, and what you were asking earlier, you know, the religious aspect is the biggest one, because people have always asked me, they say, well, why do it? You know, it's like, are you kidding? I go, think about the lower end of it was like, you know, academics, you know, every university in every country, you would have to empty out libraries and the physical sciences would be in chaos for years and years. Economically, you know, we'll just fast forward to like world markets now. World markets, I mean, the stock markets would have to be frozen. They'd have to be locked down for months because you have no idea. I mean, the ramifications are huge. But the biggest one, of course, is the religious houses, which I mentioned earlier, which is if you give the religious houses of the world simultaneously leverage against scientism, which you have, and the science foundations, which you have built meticulously for centuries, you know, not a lot of centuries, but centuries, you're asking for it. And even if they're, and I'm only speaking from, you know, I put myself in their shoes, you know, use a little empathy and put yourself in the black hat's shoes and say, what's the worst that could happen? Well, if even there's a 10% chance that the people just go nuts and start running through the streets with pitchforks and torches looking for you, you don't do it. I mean, heck, just not even 20 years earlier, let's use the Roswell thing. That's a great example. Roswell, which was 1946, 47, crap, I can't remember. I think it was 47. The Think about what happened there. Remember, you know, you didn't even have television. You had radio and some newspapers and, you know, an overzealous general or commander, base commander out in Roswell. You know, the World War had just ended, you know, shortly. We had won and he's on a post-war high and he, you know, they find the wreckage of this thing and they, excuse me.
Yeah.
What's the first thing he does? It's like, yeah, got ourselves. I'm going to be a hero. Spaceship, call the papers. And he calls them. And
so
this story gets out there. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, finish your thought. I just want to make.
I mean, and the point was is that the population started to get really buzzing. You know, started ramping up over this thing, and until you know the Pentagon steps in, it's like, no, weather balloon. Period. Full stop. That's it. Good night, folks. And that was it. And that was the last you heard of it. But before then, it was getting pretty tense. Imagine that multiplied by orders of magnitude. You know, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, you're living in a big box. You're living in a big building.
You're bringing up a lot of points. I don't want to forget anything before I address it. So, you know,
go ahead.
I'm a Christian, but I'm not like a pastor or a recruiter, at least not yet. I'm not trying to like, you know, evangelize anybody. I'm looking at this as a reporter. And, you know, no matter what your faith, your background is, that there does seem to be, I think we can agree, an international secret group that is behind this treaty, that's behind this cover-up, that's probably also behind this false science, scientism, that has this agenda that is clearly, you know, I think it's anti-God. I think we can make a good case for that. And therefore it's anti-faith. Even if you disagree with me about which religion you happen to be, it's anti all faith because this is going to affect everyone's religion. And it's also given the vaccine quacks like world power as the source of authority now, rather than a moral code or God or something. Now it's the idiots giving us the vaccines, telling us what's truth and what's not. And I think that all of these things are vaccine science. So, you know, establishing that there is this group, you know, Ernest Shackleton, that 1908 Nimrod expedition seems to be proof that they were aware of this, knew about this, were looking for this kind of stuff. And now, you know, fast forward, like you said, they were covering up the UFO stuff. And that's kind of a segue into the aliens topic. Well, now they're going the opposite. Now they're shouting it from the rooftops. They won't stop disclosing it. So it's like they're giving us this false revelation of, you know, it's almost like it's a false reveal. It's not quite as good as God is real, but it's like, here's our creators, the aliens, because they're setting it up so obviously with panspermia and the multiverse and they're putting it in the movies and stuff. So am I just nuts, or do you see that there's like an evil satanic cabal that hates God running the world?
You're not wrong. I made the original clues, and the Christian community very much prompted me into making one because they said I got emails almost immediately when I was doing, you know, the first single digit clues, and they said, oh, you know, you're dancing around the God issue. And so I made a clue literally called They Are Hiding God. Because I mean, first off, get the obvious out of the way, which is, you know, why would you hide God? You know, how would you do it? Which is, if we are living in a building, if we are living in a structure, you can't acknowledge that structure unless you find out a way to spin it to your advantage. But back then, it's like, because if you all of a sudden, let's say you've got government personnel that are standing in front of, I don't know, the outer rim of the barrier, that right there just screams that you've lost some of the credibility. It's like, oh no, we're the government, we're the highest power in the world. And then the audience says, well, yeah, except for the guys that built that giant wall behind you, you know, the giant, you know, whatever it is, it's called a big door or whatever. And they immediately lose credibility. It's the old Air Force saying, which is, you know, why they won't fully disclose. And the Navy actually said that earlier this year, which was, hey, we've got tons of UFO stuff, but we're not going to tell you. And they just said, because it's a national security thing, it would tip our hand too much as far as our weapon capabilities. But that's not the truth. There's an older saying, which is you can't rule the skies if you don't rule the skies. So, you know, the Air Force, even with their best stuff, it just pales in comparison to what's been flying around for centuries and centuries. So you don't want to admit that. It's like, oh yeah, we've got top-notch fighters. Oh yeah, we don't have a chance against those things though. because you look weak by comparison. It's again one of those rules of power.
Like the Admiral Byrd.
But yes, go ahead.
Like the Admiral Byrd fight.
Oh yeah, you mean the Operation High Jump?
Yeah, well, where they got attacked by those craft that just obliterated the entire military.
Oh, yeah. During Operation High Jump, when you send down a full-blown carrier fleet and 5,000 men
to a chunk
in the whole nine yards. And, of course, we don't know that one, as far as the actual details, no one's going to know for sure. I mean, there's been tons of speculation, but whatever, I will say this, it was kind of both ways. Did they run into something where they were humbled very, very quickly? Because, you know, in 1946, when Operation Hydra happened, our fighter capability was very limited. You know, we had some decent planes, I guess, you know, for propeller planes, but we certainly didn't have jets yet. So, but whatever happened down there was resolved one way or another, because by 1954, when Admiral Byrd was touring, he didn't have a care in the world other than he was worried about other countries fighting over resources in Antarctica. Yeah. And then after Operation Deep Freeze 55, 56, that was completely rolled back. Which was, oh yeah, no one should be going down to Antarctica ever. That's it. Sign the trees, going, kick everybody off. And it's like, you know, that's it. Good night, everybody. It's like, what happened? He said the whole place was made out of money. When's the last time you saw anyone in the capitalistic world walk away from money? You know, leave money on the table, especially that much money.
So that
was my biggest red flag. It's like, no, this world runs off greed and money and power, and you just did the opposite, which meant that there's something out there that you really need, that would get messy, that you don't want to deal with.
So, you know, talking about aliens, you know, the same vein of actual.
Sorry, say it again. You're breaking up a bit.
Sorry. Yeah. That damn satellite. So can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I can.
Talking about aliens, you know, the same scientific approach, the actual scientific method that brings you to the flat Earth will also eventually bring you to the firmament, which basically means that there's no such thing as aliens. I mean, you can't get through that. They're not from outer space, which isn't real, but they're from here. They've been here the whole time. So how do you approach that with people, especially people
that pretty easily. When it comes to the whole aliens thing, I'm fond of saying, and science fiction novels have talked about this in one capacity or another, which is they don't have to be from Mars and Jupiter and Venus and all that stuff you see in the Twilight Zone. They're just older versions of us for some reason. And I get it. It's kind of, you know, which is why I keep saying this place is kind of like a school. A civilization has a limited amount of time. I don't know exactly what the threshold is. I mean, our history only goes back unbroken like 5,000 years, but there, of course, are remnants of civilizations all over the place that are much, much older. I mean, you know, the sunken cities off Japan, sunken cities off of India, Bosnian pyramids, the real pyramids, Bimini Road, Atlantis, Pumapunku, Machu Picchu, blah, blah, blah. It just goes on and on and on. The point is they were there, and, you know, there's ruins all over the place. Eventually, of those civilizations flying around, I mean, grab some night vision binoculars and just start looking at the skies. Skies are filled with stuff. You know, you just can't see them because their lights are off and their engines are perfectly silent. But there also seems to be rules in place. One of the oldest arguments of UFOs is, well, why aren't they just landing in the middle of Indiana? You know, getting out and taking selfies and signing some autographs. That's like, well, because it would change everything. There's protocol. You know, I don't want to steal too much from Star Trek. But the prime directive is a fantastic theme, which is if you want the population on the ground, the current civilization, to act naturally, don't mess with them. Not on a large scale. So, I mean, if you want to pick off a few people, you know, grab some people in a camping trip or off a boat that seems to be marooned or some soldiers that are lost, sure. Why not? But you're not going to go into the middle of any city. I don't know if you remember me saying on different things, which is the greatest UFO sighting of all time, which was also a huge breach of protocol, is the 1561 Nuremberg event, which has got its own wiki page. It's just brilliant. I mean, huge. Yeah. I mean, these giant factions that showed up over Germany, Nuremberg, Germany in the 1500s.
Yeah.
But that could never happen today because we have, you know, modern photography.
Well, what about the Phoenix?
But back then, all they could do is sketch it, and they skipped. Well, the Phoenix thing was okay, but again, limited. We didn't have HD technology during the Phoenix event, and the craft did not light it. If it was multiple crafts, I don't know. It could have been one giant craft, I suppose, but you couldn't see it very well. I've watched enough of the Phoenix footage. It's like very clever. That was about the last time you could get close to a pot, and it was also during at night. So that same event could not happen during the day.
What do you? First, I want to give you my thoughts on this, but what do you think that the aliens' motivations, goals, agenda are? I mean, it does seem that, you know, we're getting into a point where the disclosure is turning into propaganda. You know, it's not just in the movies, and they're not trying to ridicule or censor anyone over it anymore. Now they're like almost pushing it. Before I give you my thoughts on this, because I want to share some things. You know, if your area is flat earth, my area is like the deep state's occult beliefs. And I can fill in some blanks here on what they think that these things are. But I want to get your thoughts first.
For me, again, I just think they're older civilizations that are locked in here with us. I mean, the argument, which I've heard many times, is like, okay, can they leave this structure, you know, and come and go freely? Or are they trapped in here with us? If it was me, I'd trap us in here with us. Because if they have access to get out, there's too much, I think, of a temptation of us to try to mimic that and find a way out. And like the old movie from one of the early sci-fi movies from back in the day, the original, The Day the Earth Stood Still, we should never be let out of this place, you know, by our own power. You know, that the movie basically said, yeah, you guys are far too dangerous to just, you know, let run amok out there. You know, who knows what trouble you can get in because what we do to each other on a regular basis.
Sure.
But yeah, that's what I think they are. And do I think that eventually I do think there are rules in place that they can't interact on a regular basis until, of course, we come to the end, act three, which one of my thoughts was, is that when a civilization reaches a threshold, I do not know exactly what that threshold is, where, you know, going all the way back to the Tower of Babel, you know, the Tower of Babel is a great example because they immediately knew where they were. And that's straight out of Genesis, where an older civilization that predates us, has nothing to do with us, figured out what the world shape of the world was. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to get out of here. We're building a bridge to the top of this structure now. And they were unified in that, you know, in that theory. And then God looks down and says, oh yeah, this is not going to go well because they're going to make it. So we're going to, I got to scatter this. We got to start over.
Well, anyway, you know, it's interesting that you bring up Babel and stuff. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh yeah. So the threshold is, I think every civilization has their time, but when a civilization reaches a point where whatever percentage of it starts kind of clicking into, it's like, okay, this world is not what is advertised to be by our own people. Then at that point, something else happens. You know, whoever built this or whoever wants to pretend that they built it steps in, which is what I would do if I was the Illuminati, which is the easiest thing for them is to stage something, you know, do a fake, you know, Project Bluebeam or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, here's who actually runs the world. And then you introduce them and deceive the population how you see fit.
What?
That's the black hat version of it.
So what if these things aren't just Project Bluebeam? What if it is a scientific faking of, you know, signs and miracles and wonders and stuff, you know, Project Bluebeam and all of the advanced spacecraft, and not really spacecraft, but advanced military craft that are beyond our technology. But let me first go back to first premises here. And if we know that they're lying to us about something as fundamental as things like evolution and the shape and cosmology and everything, and we also know that the so-called aliens are not from actually outer space, but they've been here the whole time, then I'm just right. I'm gonna throw out the last 500 years, and I'm just gonna go back to a Christian worldview. And if anyone else is from a different religion, follow along from your religion's perspective, because they all say the same story. Now, the different pagan religions, all of the other religions that, and I'm not being mean, but all of the non-Christian religions basically have a perspective of these aliens or their children telling the story. And they all talk about these sacred serpents that brought wisdom and technology, kind of the Prometheus figure. They came to mankind. Right. They taught mankind all sorts of things, including bad stuff, which is kind of only recorded in the Christian Genesis worldview of like the fallen angels teaching mankind horrible things and creating the Nephilim, which were the giants, you know, the hybrids, the mutants. Those right. giants had the elongated skulls that you see today on the little gray aliens. And all throughout the historical and archaeological record with the elongated skull children, the star child, for example, you see these as the priests and the rulers around the blood sacrifice temples. I would argue, and I think that I have a lot of evidence to support this, but it would take a while, that the elite have been worshiping these things since the time of the Tower of Babel and before in the pre-flood world, and that the genetic contamination and gene splicing and hybridization that they're teaching people that they were in those days basically is why God flooded the world in the first place to kill them, because all flesh was corrupted. And even though, you know, they managed to kind of make it through the flood in that the giants came back later, these things were basically there with us the whole time throughout human history, eating us, sacrificing us, ruling over us, enslaving us. Now, the giants are not giant anymore. They're not as big because they got smaller over time. But the elongated skull could still be there with the right genetics. So the idea that these aliens could show up looking like a little gray alien is absolutely plausible. And it may be an actual genetic Nephilim, a hybrid, which goes back to the elite's religion and belief system. Even if we don't believe this, you know, it is recorded in pretty much every religion, giants that ate people and interbred with humans and sacred wisdom serpents and all that. Except in the Bible, it's the serpent of the garden. You know, they could still be here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, no question. If they are still here, I'm not going to discount everything you just said at all. They appear to be in somewhat limited numbers, and controlling the population, I think it was decided a long time ago, wouldn't be by them directly. You know, the population can be controlled just by controlling the rulers that control them. You know, that way, again, you know, being the puppet masters behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, otherwise you're talking about a standing army you would have to put in various places, and that never works well. So control the population as naturally as you can, which is, you know, set up governments and set up ideologies. And of course, you know, influence the different religions if you can. Oh yeah. Yeah. You bet.
So if we take that lesson from the pre-flood world and kind of what happened last time we saw these aliens, basically, and you can look at the historical right. record, the Christian's scriptural record, including the Apocrypha, like the Book of Enoch, for details. Or you can go look at any of the mm-hmm. pagan or even atheistic worldview histories. They all talk about giants, and you can still find the bones right. today and stuff. So with that understood, you know, we're looking for certain markers of their rule. It would be, as you said, a right. small number of the population. They would all be basically in positions of power, you know, the priests and the rulers and the kings of the time, or whatever that alternative mm-hmm. is. You know, today it's the science crowd right. too. That's the priests, at least the priests of scientism, right? It's a very similar role. Yep. And they also still wear the white robes, just like the priest did. Kind of funny. Yeah. It's science and seance. Yeah. I don't know if there's a similarity for a reason, but that's awfully coincidental. So, you know, assuming all of that, maybe there is a tribe of people that's not populous, but overrepresented in positions of power. And maybe there are a couple of telltale markers like pointy heads or something that can tell us who's in power. You know, they're in the Bible, it's the seed of the serpent in Genesis 3:15. I would argue that the seat of the serpent rule basically rules the deep state, and Kanye West just called him out.
Potentially. I mean, I don't know honestly how much what Kanye truly knows. And you know, he does he have suspicions? Sure. Does he have possible examples? Maybe. I mean, the media is doing their best to squash his credibility as much as possible, and the sponsors are pulling back in droves. Sure, I can see that. I mean, it's interesting that he would be, you know, one of the first to really start bringing. I mean, he's not the first. There have been others that have tried to talk in the past.
He just moved the Overton window and shoved a huge boot right in the door. It's not closing now. So the topic is like out there and people are starting to kind of come to it. But I mean, I'm not saying that Kanye has any idea what he's talking about, except maybe he has some legitimate criticism for Jewish people. But I do think that there's an old axiom that's basically, how do you know who rules you? You know, find out who you're not allowed to criticize. And I think Kanye just told the whole world who runs the world.
I gotcha.
You know, this is basically kind of building up to my premise. And this is as controversial as anything flat earth related to a normie. And it's even hard to say because it takes 1,000 hours of research to prove this to people. But I actually believe that the Jews of today, the tribe of Jews or the Khazarians really, are the descendants of the Nephilim. From the genetic markers with the pointy heads, you can see this in the Rothschilds and some of the more pure blood families that are descendants from these elongated skull giants, to the traditions and the religious practices that they have, which are basically ancestor worship of these fallen giants, and then also cannibalism, which has been going back all the way to the pre-flood world when the Nephilim were consuming mankind, and then also later in the tribes of Canaan, for example, with, you know, Bible tribes aside, this is a history as well. So there were tribes that came out of Noah, and one of his sons was Ham. And Ham had a bunch of giants in his lineage, specifically Canaan. All of Canaan's tribe were all giants, and they were all basically demon worshipers, occultists. They were all the enemy of God. They hated God. They hated God's people. You know, the Bible records how the Canaanite giants were basically in the land trying to kill the tribes, and God told them to drive those giants out. So this is kind of the history that builds up to the modern day, where we have a deep state made up of people who want to hide God and promote aliens.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I got you. Not just trust me
because it's insane until you look into it, and it's not insane anymore. And it all just sort of checks out, including the Bible and all the prophecies and stuff. I was an atheist until my 30s, but you know, when I see prophecies that came true hundreds of years apart, that's interesting. When I see that the people that run the world hate the Bible, hate Jesus, and constantly are trying to convince us God is not real, I'm also looking at that because I'm a journalist, I'm a reporter, and I'm not new to censorship. Usually that's where the truth is the hottest, is where they're censoring the hardest. So why are they, why are they censoring the flat earth stuff? Why have they been censoring the flat earth stuff for 500 years? There's a big agenda here. I think this is of Satan, the fallen angels, collectively, the Satan, the enemy, the adversary. I think that they run the world.
I have no reason to review that.
So that's,
I mean,
that's
where we were to. I will say this though, we were go ahead.
I was just gonna say that because I wanted to say all of that context, but before I say, you know, that's where we get the aliens from. You know, there's a lot there to unpack, and I get that, and I don't want people to trust me. Go look at my websites for the information, like the Serapium, but that is where I get the idea from, that I think that the aliens are actually the Nephilim or the fallen angels themselves back to do it all over again, to create new hybrids. Like these UFO reports talk about unexplained pregnancies. All of the abduction stories are about ovaries and reproductive systems and stuff. Like there's a pattern here.
I'm wondering, you know, again, I keep looking for when they're going to try to introduce, because up until now, you know, I'm a big believer in the big showy act three, which is, you know, revealing one of the older civilizations, if possible. You know, you could do it now. You couldn't have done it in 1960, but you can do it now. I mean, you got 6 billion smartphones out there. You could introduce whatever narrative you want in the time it takes to get a pizza and get everybody more or less on the same page and then see where the chips fall. But so far, you know, I haven't seen the narrative yet. I mean, they kind of delve into it, but you know when a narrative is being pushed out there because all the networks do it simultaneously. And it's a very simple one or two syllable, you know, this is good, this is bad, this is close, you know, be afraid of this. And right now, I just haven't seen it over the last couple of years. You know, even during the middle of the pandemic, it's like I would have thought I've seen it on a side note, but I haven't. It just seems to be kind of simmering off in the background. And
yeah, so, it's coming.
But I'm looking for it.
Well, we can both tell it's coming. And I would say the big difference is now, between now and 500 years ago, before this false scientism really took root, with you know, heliocentrism and the globe Earth model. I would say that the major difference isn't the electricity. It's not even the cell phones necessarily, because you know they had the town crier. People had news even in like the most remote parts of the world. It just took a little bit longer. The big stuff still got to them. I think that the big stuff is that less people believe in God, of whatever religion, either way, and that people now would accept anything that came out of outer space, whereas people then would have assumed immediately that these things were demons.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a great point. The 1561 Nuremberg event I mentioned was not regarded as any sort of science fiction event because science fiction didn't exist. It was considered a religious event because they had no other options. It's like, oh, it's got to be a sign from God. What, you know, but they had no way to interpret it. Now, yes, I mean, everybody is focused. I mean, good Lord. I mean, when I was flying just a couple of days ago, you know, everybody's glued to their little personal computers that they're in their hands. And if you're a certain age, you never let go. You're constantly, short of the shower, that thing is always in your hands. And so, yes, whatever message is being broadcast on that tiny little screen, that's the mantra.
Yeah. And aliens are cool now, and superpowers are cool, and hybrids are cool, and X-Men and all of the Marvel universe and stuff. So, you know, I think that they're basically priming us for a return of the Watchers, or a term that was used for these fallen angels. The Hebrew was Neha Elohim, but basically last time they came, they taught us a bunch of horrible sin. They gave us some technology. We advanced very quickly, especially around the genetic research and manipulation of mixing species together and creating hybrids. Basically, they taught us GMO. And I would say that they're back and it's all about to happen again, which seems to have been a quote from Buzz Aldrin, from one of his friends after he had his heart attack. You know, I don't remember which conference that was from. I've got it in my docuseries, but one of his friends had spoken to him after the heart attack, and he had said that they're back and it's all going to happen again, or something to that extent. And these occultists have known this. They have, you know, they basically worship Nimrod and edify him because he was a man who became one of these Nephilim. He learned somehow from the pre-flood technology he found that in the post-flood world, he became a giant, and then he basically ruled the one world government. And that's what they're trying to bring back right now, is that one world government. That's where the Freemasons come from. That's why the pyramid on the back of the dollar has the eye floating on top. It's not on the pyramid yet, because their great work of the ages, the magnum opus, is not yet done. And that magnum opus in their own writings is to bring back that one world government.
Yeah. And if, you know, if a older civilization or whatever ship or whatever you want to, showed up, what's different between now and hundreds of years ago? Hundreds of years ago, yeah, people have gone running and screaming. I have no doubt that I don't care what size of ship it was, a big ship, you know, showed up in the middle of wherever, you know, fairly quietly, you know, not menacing, not just start blowing things up. people would just stand and stare, and you know, most of them would just pull their phones up and start live streaming.
Well, you know,
that's what would happen.
Look at the movies that kind of portray it, and it's not that far from the truth, because you see these seances in the desert, contact in the desert events, and I'm not bashing those people, but if you had these mile wide ships or any kind of alien contacts in the sky showing us their presence, like say New York City, for example, you'd have topless women spray painting alien symbols on their boobs on top of the skyscrapers, trying to bring them down. I mean, that's how we are today. People would be welcoming them with a party. We'd be having a massive party with DJs and stuff on every top of every building.
Absolutely, which is straight out of Independence Day. Exactly. And you're right. And most of it is because of decades. Only now, like within the last 10 years, can you say that it doesn't matter what age you are, there is an alien ship movie. Reference going all the way back, you know, because the early movies going all the way back to, you know, the day the earth stood still was in the 50s. And here we are 70 something years later. I don't care what age you are, whether you're 10 years old or you're 90 years old, you have a reference. So no one, if something actually happened now, no one would just be blindsided.
Yeah.
Be like, what's that? I don't even understand that concept. Everyone would have a some sort of reference, you know, that goes back into their childhood or even recent. Yeah. And yeah, the panic, basically what I'm saying is there's been so much media covering the topic, you know, fictional media, almost nothing, to where again, I don't know. Very, of course, there's going to be some people, but that's just because they wouldn't trust them. Not because they wouldn't know who they were. They'd be like, oh, they're probably evil. And then they run away.
Yeah. Well, there's all the horror movies,
by the way, let me bring up one more thing, which is, well, yeah, there's the horror movies, but what I was going to say was whoever it is, and I'd only be a very limited set of colors because of the discrimination that we have on this world, right? So they can only be blue or gold or some sort of silver, but glowing would help no matter what it is. Because whoever shows up, if they look like one of the demographics that we have here, well, then it would there would be a, which is why they can't show up red, because the childhood's end with horns, because people's like, oh wow, well, there's the demon that we've seen in just about every horror movie ever. Yeah. And they can't be green because, well, people know, well, those are obviously Martians, and Martians are evil. So they've got to be very careful whatever they choose, whatever the introduction, which is why I think the Avatar blue is just a great one to use.
Well, I believe that, and this is my personal belief, this is speculation, you know, I can't guarantee it, but I believe that the great deception that the Bible talks about during the end times, in part, and I think it's going to be part of the biggest part of it, is that the aliens are our creators. And I think that that's going to be what you're talking about, like Act 3, what's coming next, the big reveal. And I think that, you know, basically the whole world has now been exposed to the truth and the lie.
Yeah.
And I also believe that that's the last 500 years of false science, evolution, all of it was to bring us to this one point, to convince us of this one lie when it gets here. And, you know, I think that's within the next 5 years.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, which is, and why, as far as the great deception, because it fools pretty much everybody, you know, and why wouldn't you buy it? If somebody shows up with a tech that's far more advanced than yours, and they say, oh, by the way, you know, we did it, who wouldn't believe it? Which is why I thought one of the most honest and humbling things in science fiction media was Contact, you know, the movie with Jodie Foster, where, you know, that she found, they discovered the transit system between planets, right? And she gets there, and she says, did you build this? And the humility, which was, they said, no, we didn't build it. We don't know who did. So basically, it was here when we got here, even though we're way more advanced than you, which goes against counterintuitive to power, which is kind of like the pyramids. If you find a technology that's above, you claim it. If there's no witnesses, you claim it, which is why I still believe, you know, because I got to see, you know, the pyramids up close, because I've heard when you see them up close and you look behind, you look at Cairo, nothing against the Egyptians, but you realize like, yeah, these guys have nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And but of course, you know, the Pharaoh, whoever it was, the Pharaohs back in the day, you know, when they discovered, you know, the pyramids abandoned, apparently. And, you know, why wouldn't you? You look around, it's like, okay, so here's how the story goes. We are pretty much demigods just because we made that claim. Doesn't even matter if we can't explain how we built them. Just the fact that they're here is powerful enough. And it worked.
Yeah. The Egyptian occult and mythology, or history, really, because the mythologies are real, at least in a sense. Parts of these stories are real. Right. It's a fallen perspective often, but the Egyptian fallen perspective from the pharaohs is kind of funny, because the Book of Jasher kind of reveals the story of Pharaoh, how he got his name, Pharaoh, his title, which was always passed down from father to son, was figuring out a way to tax people for burying their dead. So Osiris, which was a living god king at the time, a Nephilim giant, gave him this title of Pharaoh because he learned how to tax the dead. I mean, that's how evil these things are. And he basically made him his surrogate ruler or a steward, because he didn't want to do any work. You know, he was a lazy king in absence. And then later on, this human Pharaoh killed the Nephilim and took over. And you see this reflected in some of the archaeological finds, where the elongated skull pharaohs had their skull smashed in. And then it was Ramses and his dynasty that took over. It was really interesting stuff that... Right. It all goes back in every culture on every continent to pyramids and giants and elongated skulls and fallen angels and blood sacrifice and flat earth and all these wonderful, amazing things that we were told were mythology while they were lying to us about vaccines and globe. Well, I'm just really fascinated by all these things. And I guess we're coming up on an hour, so it's a good place to stop. What's your thoughts on CERN before we close it out? Just kind of a bonus question at the end.
Bonus question. I think CERN was the natural evolution of everything they've been trying to get out of here. You know, in the beginning, if you believe we're in a structure, and I do, and I know, I understand men, which is, you know, if you find a barrier, some sort of wall, was the first thing you do. It's like, you know, get the cannon, you know, and you start rolling up, you start blasting at it with whatever you have. And it doesn't work, right? It's like, you know, if Megaton doesn't do it, well, you're not going to be able to do much. So then you have to do something more subtle, which, you know, you roll into, you know, a program like HARP, which, you know, some sort of frequency manipulation. Maybe you can do something there. And then that's not working. It's like, what else you got? You know, and suddenly somebody comes up with, you know, basically a version of Stargate, which is, maybe we can open up a portal and we don't have to use brute force. Maybe we can find a way to just, you know, phase our way through it. And it seems to be the most promising, because you can do all sorts of fun stuff with that technology. I don't think they've done it. I don't think it's going to be able to work. However, yeah. If you believe the stories that are coming out of CERN, it might work the other way, which, you know, goes into the whole, you know, Stephen King is ahead of his time in some ways, where, you know, if you ever seen the movie called The Mist, which was, you never saw the base, the Air Force base that they were doing the projects, but they were basically opening up a portal to another dimension, and some things got through, you know, before they shut it down.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, I've heard, you probably heard the same rumors coming out of CERN that, you know, when they open this portal up, bad things happen.
I can go deeper.
You know, some of the weird ceremonies before CERN are spooky as well, but that's what I think, you know, ultimately that's what they're trying to do.
So, you know, first of all, civilizations have actually summoned things and disappeared, like in that story. For example, the Anasazi, Native Americans. However, I want to go a little bit deeper on CERN, because, you know, you brought up some interesting stuff. If you ignore the statue of Shiva, the destroyer, if you ignore the occult
right.
ritual that they got busted doing like late at night next to that statue, which they said was a prank to cover it up. If you ignore the video that they put out called Symmetry, which is a bunch of like sex, magic, dancing and orgy symbols. And it's not like an open orgy, but there's a lot of like naked people and in orgy scenes and stuff in it. And it's real fast and they sort of make it artistic. And it's like dance and the beauty of dance and expression, but really like it's a video about summoning things through portals and sex magic. And there's like an eye at the end and opens up. And even if you ignore all of that, go look at the Gotthard Tunnel ritual ceremony that they did when they opened up the Gotthard Tunnel. And you'll see that there were basically, in, you know, summoning demons and false gods through a portal. So, you know, with that said, you know, it's worth mentioning to people out there who are prophecy minded or watching for this kind of stuff, that the facility of CERN today is basically the Tower of Babel rebuilt, in my opinion. Mm. And the reason I think that is because they built it on Apollyacus, the Roman city of the abyss, the gateway to the underworld, which is named after Apollyon or Apollo. But Apollyon is also in the Bible, the destroyer, kind of related to end times. So I think we're about to see the bottomless pit opened and bad things are going to come out of CERN.
That's an interesting concept because, you know, the bottomless pit is the bottom, you know, that the whole concept behind it has to come from somewhere. And that does seem to be the most likely candidate right now.
Yeah. And you basically don't have to look too hard to see that the people that run the world are Satanists, or at least they're into some dark stuff. For those who doubt me, go look up Podesta art. That's all you have to do. But don't do it when there's children around, because that's some gruesome stuff. It's really horrific. Mark, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to let you kind of give us your closing thoughts and your websites and everything. People definitely need to look you up and your content. And you've got some top-notch stuff about flat biblical earth and some of these topics from a historian science perspective and trying to like prove the stuff that we're talking about against a hostile scientism, quack scene science world. But just, you know, thank you for coming back on the show. It was a great chat. I think people are going to enjoy it. With that said, give us your closing thoughts, anything you'd like to say to the audience. And
sure. Yeah. I'll keep it brief. Don't take what I say, everything you've heard so far, you know, as gospel. You know, I'm not here to convince you. I'm not here to persuade you. I'm just here to give you a few ideas, put a seed in your head, and eventually you are going to have to figure this out for yourself. In fact, don't rely, you know, on videos and podcasts and stuff like that. Do your own research and ask questions. That's why the retention rate of our community is so high, is because I didn't tear down the world for you, you know, and the concept of, you know, the globe and wherever the reality you think you are, you tore it down yourself. And if you can do that, then there's no way to go back. It is the Matrix, red pill, blue pill. And again, once you've done it, you know, that's why I warn people. It's like, if you wake up every day and you think everything is awesome, you're not ready. But if then yeah, take a shot. Just be warned that once you get past that point of no return, you know, forever are you down, you know, you're forever down the rabbit hole. Sure. As far as my stuff, the easiest way, because, you know, social media stuff changes over the years, is just type in, you know, BitChute, Brighty on Rumble, Google, Firefox, but especially YouTube. Type in Flat Earth Mark, you will find my stuff, and then go from there, and hopefully it leads you to good things. So that's it.
All right, Mark. Thank you again for your time. We'll have you back on the show sometime, and we'll follow up on this. There's so many other areas we could go. Again, thank you for your time. Yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Please share, like, your life depends on it. Maybe even your soul. I don't know. Things are getting kind of crazy these days. And let us know what you think in the comments, and definitely check out Mark's work and his amazing videos. Actually, part of the reason I found God was some of Mark's videos. So with that said, we'll see you guys on the next one. Nemos out.